Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. I hope you're doing well today. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I got to sit down with Dennis Greaves of Nine Below Zero. And it was a wonderful chat. You're about to find out exactly how wonderful it was. When your conversations involve what it's like going on tour with the Kinks, what it's like being one of the bands that was on the Young Ones, you know you're in for a good chat. And Dennis is instantly so likable. You're going to really enjoy this episode. Before I get started with it, just a thanks to 76 for producing this. Thanks to Scribius, Pip and everybody over at the Distraction Pieces Network. And just quickly, if you do enjoy this episode, then please have a look in the back catalogue. You can go over and listen on Spotify, iTunes, Acast. And if you are over on any of those and you get a chance to subscribe or give us a review, then that's much appreciated. And have a good route around in the archives, because there's stacks of episodes where I get to chat to musicians, producers, DJs, actors. There's a lot for you to get stuck into. And if that's not enough, then I also put a weekly show out on Patreon. So I have a Patreon page as well. The one-stop shop to find out about all of this is offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. So why not head over there and have a look? But let's get back to the job at hand, which is me introducing today's episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track Podcast with Dennis Greaves. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fairwear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin. Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. And sitting opposite me today is Dennis Graves.
Good afternoon. Evening? Where are we?
Afternoon, mate.
Good afternoon.
You all right?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, very nice. Lovely part of the world.
It's all right. Yeah. Bit of East London.
Bit of difference.
It's probably changed a bit over...
Hasn't it just?
Yeah, it's a stranger.
Hasn't it just? I wish I bought property on the dockside. It's 4 years ago. Oh, man.
Can you imagine what you would have got a plot for around here years ago?
I remember I got married in 79, right? The band changed their name to 9 Below Zero in 79. And for my honeymoon, I couldn't afford a honeymoon, so we were at a night in the Tower Hotel. And I remember it being just a bomb site all around the Tower Hotel. You know? St. Catherine's Dock, I don't think it was even there. Early, I'm just thinking now.
Yeah. Imagine.
Imagine.
Right, Dennis, we always start this podcast with track one, which I'm going to ask you what you think is the song with the greatest ever intro.
What did I put? Did I put Waterloo Sunset?
You certainly did.
Yeah. Now, the trouble is, Gordon, if you've asked me them questions the next day, it would have been five different
things. Of course,
Because there's so much amazing music that's been around. So, yeah, Waterloo Sunset, the intro on the guitar, the setup of the tune. Probably, I think they actually used it as an A-level study of a pop song. So you've got the intro, the verse, the bridge, the middle eight, melody, lyrics. It's got everything. As a songwriter, you aspire to this man, Ray Davies.
As what? As a perfect pop record?
Perfect. In every sense of the word.
Because the sort of... The intro's loaded a little bit, isn't it? Because it's like that... Dun, 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 and then it goes again, doesn't it? With the kind of the play over, the lead, or whatever you want to call
Dave,
it.
Dave playing the riff, yeah. Yeah, because I toured with them and I had the privilege of spending many, many, many nights talking to Ray and Dave about this, you know. And they were born in Muswell Hill.
Yep.
I was born in Tufton Park. They were Arsenal, I was Tottenham. We had some lovely nights.
How was that, touring with the Kinks?
Unbelievable, fantastic. First of all, we walked into the auditorium and the tour manager sat us all down and said, you are not allowed to do this, you're not allowed there, don't look at the band, you're not allowed to speak, you know, when you're spoken to, blah, blah, blah. Within 2 days, we were all over it. We was in the dressing room with them, we were everywhere because they saw in us themselves.
Yeah, of course.
Little R&B band, you know, starting up. It got on great, loved it. Fond memories and Ray and Dave are just, amazing.
Yeah, I'm hearing rumours that there's kink stuff happening with them.
Apparently, but, you know, Ian Gibbons died last month. Poor Jim Rodford, their bass player, not the original Peter Quaife, but the second bass player, he died. I mean, it's ridiculous. And he died, he fell down the stairs, and I'm hoping he was drunk and rock and roll.
Yeah.
And I hope he didn't tread on his dressing gown or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want Jim to have gone out in a really good...
A place of rock and roll.
You know, he's trod on his slipper and fell down the stairs. Oh, no, Jim was lovely. And Jim was in, like, early Alexis Corner bands. Jim was in the 50s playing R&B, and we used to get these stories from Jim about the early... Because I'm fascinated by it. That's why I am here talking to you now, was them early John Mayall, Georgie Fame gigs at the Flamingo, the Marquee. That's my dream. Cyril Davis, the early Rolling Stones.
Just going back there, tell me, what was that like seeing Georgie Fame like at that point?
Just unbelievable. I can't explain it, really. You just had to be there. And there's only like... in a club of 100, 200 people, rammed into a small club. Those were the great times, you know.
Yeah.
I went to the Marquee once. In 1 week, I saw The Jam. I saw this young band from Australia called AC/DC make their first gig in London, and a band called Up, and Jeff Beck got up and played with them. Up were from Lewisham. And that was the diversity, you know. And then down the road, you got Dire Straits starting in a pub in Deptford, and then you got a bloke called Elvis Costello, playing in Nashville rooms. Great times. Great times for
music. That's a good couple of weeks of gigs, isn't it?
Ain't bad, is it?
So, I mean, around about that time, I guess that was... Because I can't think who it was I spoke to on this, this podcast about the pub rock scene. Because...
Really.
There wasn't really small venues, was there? It was pubs that was putting on the...
In the back... But pubs back then, and lots of them were closing, but they would have a back room that would hold 200, 300, 400 people. Like the Nashville rooms, for example.
Where was that?
Right on the A4, just as you come round from... so you're on the A4, just as you're going up towards Heathrow on the left. Massive, enormous pub. The Greyhound in Fulham.
Yeah.
Another one. All these pubs. And it's where we did our apprenticeship.
Yeah.
It's an apprenticeship. You know, playing in front of blokes who want to gob at you or slag you off or swear at you. You've got to handle it. You do it. It's great.
How was them early years?
Tough, but good. I would have all the guitarists in front of me. Mark would have all the harmonica players in front of him. And the bass players were standing in front of us. It was great. Like, Hope and Anchor held 60 people in Islington. Unbelievable. Just great, great, great times. And, you know, and you'd have the Damned playing there one week, Nine Below Zero another week. You got the Madness starting up round the corner. Just a real wonderful time to be in London.
And what, just them three bands there. Mm. Obviously, you mentioned your band, obviously, Nine Below Zero, and then you mentioned Madness and the Damned. Mm. And, like, what three completely different
sounds,
but you could easily see all three of them on the same bill, and it'd work.
And you'd go. Yeah, back in the day, I don't think we pigeonholed so much as we do now. It was a healthier situation. You can see Nine Below Zero and the Damned.
All right. Well, as this podcast unfolds, we'll definitely start about how the band come together stuff. But first of all, I'm going to ask you for the second track. What the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you?
I can't remember. Was it My Generation?
It wasn't. It was Brooke Benton.
Oh, Christ, yes. So it's my mum and dad's record collection. Mm-hmm. So in my mum and dad's record collection was Frank Sinatra, Johnny Mathis, and this particular track, Brooke Benton. And I only realised as I got older why I liked it. And it's blues with a bunch of strings on it to make it commercial.
But
Brooke Benton's voice is like velvet and bluesy. And I didn't realise, so I gravitated towards that. Yes, I heard Tony Bennett, Frank Sinatra, Johnny Mathis, all the crooners that mum and dad had early. Mum liked Cliff Richard, dad didn't like Cliff Richard. And that their record collection, Adam Faith, my mum's like, so I've still got the box of EPs and records. And Brooke Benton, this particular kiddo, a stunning vocal, and it was blues, and I didn't know it at the time as a kid, so I must have been 3, 4.
And how would that, when I asked what track, gave you an emotional impact, how did that impact on you emotionally? What was it?
I played it repeatedly, played it, wanted to be him, wanted it so badly, you're almost like, I've got a couple of autistic children and autistic people I get gravitated to, and I think it is a certain autism of like just surrounding yourself and immersing yourself in one thing only. I have repeated it so much so that mum and dad like thought I was ill,
Do you still do that if you find a new record?
Yeah.
Play it. Exactly the same.
Yeah, funny.
Exactly the same.
Yeah. Do you? And I think music has that power.
100%.
Yes.
At an early age, even when you was listening to these records, was you sort of in any way, shape, or form deconstructing them and working out how maybe they were layered and how they were put together?
Yeah, I was very interested in that. Really interested in what made them tick.
What age did you start messing around with making music?
7, probably. 7.
Guitar?
Guitar, always guitar. Didn't go to the piano. And funny, with my children, I put them to piano and drums. For I think, as I've learned, you know, I talk to a lot of people, and if you've got children, put them to the piano and drums. So that's, and they're very related in percussion and timekeeping. My timekeeping is not as good as I'd like it to be, but my children's are, because they gravitated to drums and keyboards.
What do you put that down to? Like the rhythm?
An inner clock.
Yeah.
An inner
metronome light.
In a metronome, yeah. Definitely, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating.
Okay. So why did you choose a guitar?
Probably wanted to be up the front. Ego.
Was your show off?
Yeah, always was at school, yeah, very much Dennis the Menace at school, outwardly bubbly and friendly, you know, and I put that down to my mum and dad, you know, gave me a great start, I've written a song for them on the album called Roots and Wings, and it's about parenting, about giving your kids a really good start, but you got to give them the wings to fly, you know, so it's getting that balance.
Okay. All right, well, look, you touched on school now. So I'm going to ask you what the song is that reminds you of your time at school.
What did I say?
Free.
Oh, my dad, and again, funny, linking to parenting, would pick me up at school. I didn't like school dinners.
Right.
So he picked me up in the Old Kent Road.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't the test match cricket on...
Yeah.
In the summer, especially the summer, it was the radio. And luckily, Mum and Dad loved their music. So he picked me and Dave Crockwell up, my mate. And my brother Jake was on the radio. And, the melody, I mean, Paul Rogers could sing that the sky is green and I'd believe him. He's just one of those amazing white boy singers, you know, white soul singers. And Free, I always love Free.
Yeah.
Love Free. I don't know why. Simple. When I listen back to it now, if you play the Free albums, just quality songwriting. The whole band, Simon Kirk. Andy Fraser was 17 when he wrote All Right Now. And he was in, I think he was in John Mayall's Blues Breakers for a week and he got sacked. But at 16, you know, amazing talent. Paul Kossoff. Well, you know, lovely, lovely story there, but unfortunately ended sadly. As I say, Paul Rogers, I just saw today Paul Rogers tweeted, and I wondered why he and Mick Ralphs got together. His band, Paul Rogers' band Peace, supported Mott the Hoople in 1971, so he would have met Mick Ralphs.
Yeah.
So they hence became Bad Company. So that was that link. That was nice to find out.
Wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. My brother Jake, what a song.
So the minute you hear that, does that literally take you straight back to that car?
My dad picking me up in a...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus... Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ford Escort, red Ford Escort. 1971, that was out. Me and Dave Crockwell getting in it with a cheese and tomato sandwich. Going home quickly, because I was at Wolves School, so We had an hour lunch. I could get home really quick, and Dad picking us up, and that was on the radio.
And so you said, you know, you was a bit of a chaff at school, and if he's playing guitar at school and stuff like that, what opportunities did you feel were available to you at that age in that school?
What was great, and I've just been talking to Asher about this, what was available was our school decided to do productions. So we were the first ever school to do Tommy, and I got the local lad song, so I sung Pinball Wizard. That was terrific. We did Oh What a Lovely War. So
how old was you?
11, 12 and 13. So I wasn't very good at school. Academically, I found out later I'm dyslexic and all that jargon. But at school, after school, we rehearsed these plays, and we did Oh What a Lovely War, South Pacific. And we did Tommy, first school to ever do Tommy. That's when I knew I was most comfortable in my skin was on stage. Isn't it funny? And that gave me the opportunity. And this is why I get very upset when the arts and crafts in schools are not being attended to, you know.
Yeah.
There is too much to academia. Not everyone's the same. We need our music and arts and crafts in our school for young children to express themselves.
Completely.
You know?
I don't think there is, you know, for someone that wasn't academically great myself,
yeah,
but was always interested in making music or drawing and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Drawing, absolutely.
It feels that, like, there's not as much emphasis is ever placed on that than there is in, you know.
I was lucky, you know, back in the day there was that facility. You could be, I mean, as I said, the plays and everything like that. And do you know what? All them kids... And one of them's my wife. We met at school. My wife, all our mates, all went on to be sort of arts and crafty.
Yeah.
In theatres, working in theatres.
Yeah.
Potters. They were, you know, one of my mates, he makes pots.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, isn't it? We gravitated
together
and were the artistic, creative children in school. And they all went on to do great things, you know.
Did you gravitate to each other? Did you have a good gang of pals at school?
Did. Of course you did, yeah, like-minded people.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got to think that the music teacher had so much to do with that.
Yeah.
He's the reason, another reason I'm sitting here talking to you.
Yeah.
He gave you that opportunity to be who you want to be.
So you're there on stage belting out the hits of Tommy.
Yeah.
Fast forward a few years. Did you tour with a Who?
Yeah.
I mean, that's surreal, right?
Absolutely. Can you believe it?
How was
that?
Can
you believe it? Oh, man.
I mean, just tell me what it's like, Dennis, when the label or your manager calls you and says, you're going to start doing some shows for The Who. Well, I mean, how do you compute that?
I think you have to go back to the record label, A&M. And the business was different then. We had filters. So when we signed to A&M, we had an A&R department. We signed without ever writing a song. We got a grand publishing deal. Ain't written a song. We bought a van. We bought a PA. We was on the road. We were going. It was all very low key. And by the way, on A&M was the Carpenters, Peter Frampton, the Police, Squeeze, Joan Armour Trading, quality. There's us from the Thomas of Beckett on A&M Records. But we had A&R. They saw something in us, right? So fast forward. They were able to, of course, here's how we got The Who. We gone in with Glyn Johns. We're working with Glyn Johns, Rolling Stones, The Beatles. We did more talking about The Beatles and The Stones than we did recording on the first album. Kenny Jones came down one night, who just joined The Who because Keith had died, and he tuned our snare, he tuned the kit, and showed Mickey, you know, because Glyn had worked with... Jonesy on the Faces stuff.
Yeah.
So he's all over the Faces. He's just joined The Who. And Jonesy went off and just said, oh, I think we should have 9 Below 0 on the bill. So we shared it with the Q-Tips, the Ruts DC and 9 Below 0. All of a sudden, we're on the road with The Who. We turned up at Lewisham Odeon, the first ever gig. In comes Kerbishley, the manager, bottle of champagne for the band. Class act, welcome. You know, lovely way to introduce yourself to it. My fondest memory, I must tell everyone this, is one Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend weren't really on good terms on this tour. It was very tense. They had one that...
When was this?
81.
81.
So you'll read it in their biographies. They weren't talking. Yeah. There was a bit fractured. One was drinking, one weren't, I think, or something. Anyway, so Daltrey didn't turn up at the Birmingham NEC gig for the sound check. And they did The Real Me. Can you see the real me?
What a tune.
What? And Townsend sung it. And I'd never seen... I was side stage watching. It was power. And I think because Roger wasn't there and the tension was released, so they had Rabbit on keyboards, Jonesy and Entwistle and Pete Townsend. So Roger's not there and they did The Real Me. I'm telling you, it was a sight to behold. It was amazing. And that will always stick with me.
Yeah.
That taught me a big lesson. That was top, top, top.
I'll tell you what, that track... That could have been in the running for a good intro as well, because when that drops in at the beginning, the opening credits of Quadrophenia, when he's on that, and then bang, and that drops in.
And the bass line.
Yeah.
Incredible. And I was there. I was side of stage. You know, lovely. Educational.
Absolutely.
Educational. Yeah.
All right, let's take you back to shopping for records when you was a young man.
Oh, man.
First record you bought, Dennis?
Was it My Generation?
Did I
get that right? Yeah. I used to go to the A1 stores. Anyone who lived in South London, East Street Market, at the end of East Street Market, was Rossi Ice Cream, and around the corner was A1 stores. And I bought my copy in there. And Mum and Dad used to go, so 65, so I'm 8. And Mum and Dad, we would go to parties on Friday, Saturdays nights. Of course, we didn't have babysitters, so a lot of the kids used to go to parties and sleep on the bed with all the coats, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I took that record with me to every party, and they wouldn't play it. And I was, like, choked. I had it on the Brunswick label. I had it, and I cherished it, and I cherished it. And that sounds as fresh to me today. I mean, that could be like some indie band.
Yeah.
It's so fresh.
Yeah.
How did they do that? It's... unbelievable.
Why wouldn't no one play at the party? Because it was too raucous.
Oh, because there was all mums and dads and playing Johnny Mathis and Frank Sinatra. And I'm there with my Who record.
Wanting to rip it up.
Oh, you know. Oh, man. Yeah, I'll never forget that.
So, how important were record shops for you growing up?
Absolutely. We had two. Danny Baker would tell you about the other one. So, is East Street, up one end, you've got A1 stores, and up the other end, on the Old Kent Road end, so that's the Woolworth Road end. Up the other end was another record shop, and Danny put a post up about it a little while ago, and I've forgotten the name of it. So we had two. And you'd be in there for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, just thumbing through. And all there was progressive, categories progressive, pop, blues, soul and jazz, probably. Yeah. And that was your lot.
For me, it was like exactly the same. You know, I'd go record shopping, and the people that worked in the record shops, they were like heroes.
Knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, there's that little bit of elitism about them as well.
Yeah,
you know?
A little bit arrogant, same as guitar shop people.
Yeah, completely.
You know, but it was your pocket money.
Yeah.
Did you save your pocket money up to buy that stuff? It just, that's all it was so important to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So would Danny Baker have been writing for the NME at that point as well?
Yeah, Danny was 79, wasn't he? I think he was in there, 76, 77, 78, 79, yeah.
Oh, and he used to work in the record shop?
No, he knew that one up at the Old Kent Road. I've forgotten it. It's the top of the Old Kent Road. It's another, a little family run it. But I'm telling you, it was like, it was a sweet shop. It was like a sweet shop that, and you know, it was all just a candy shop for me for records. You know, buying Itmec by Desmond Decker, stuff like that. You know, just what is that? Great stuff. And you'd go home, play it, and play it, and play it.
Is that all you spending your money on at that point?
Yeah, I did buy a Johnny 7. If anyone remembers a Johnny 7, it was a gun. It had 7 attachments. I bought that down the market, the East Street Market in the toy shop. But mainly it was records.
What's a Johnny 7? I want to know now.
If you look it up on a Google Johnny 7, it's a gun, it's a rifle, and it's got a grenade on it.
Did it have the little stand at the front?
That's it, stand at the front.
I remember it.
It had a rocket launcher, it had a pistol that detached, and yeah, Johnny Seven.
I mean, you was king of the gang if you had that, weren't you?
Yeah, everyone had to have a Johnny Seven. Just check it out, have a look.
It's a great name for a band as well.
If anyone's got one, yeah, isn't it? Yeah, if anyone's got one, let me know.
Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off The Beat and Track Podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. All right, so by the time you've left school,
yeah,
are you messing around in bands?
No, I was swimming. I was a London Schoolboys champion backstroker. So from the age of 8, I was in the swimming pool. Kept me off the streets. I think I've been a bit of a tow rag, really.
Yeah.
Kept me off the streets, kept me really fit, kept me focused. And what it gave me was discipline, because I would be in the pool at 6 o'clock in the morning and then go to school. And then after school, I was at Crystal Palace at 4 o'clock in the afternoon swimming. And I was London Schoolboys champion in 68, 69 with backstroke. So it gave me an immense discipline and kept me off the streets.
Nice.
Which was, you know, important at the time. As I say, I might have been a bit of a naughty boy.
Yeah. And so you then start playing more seriously. When did you form your first band then?
I watched the Old Grey Whistle Test. At school, we would talk about Monty Python's and the Old Grey Whistle Test. So you watch the Old Grey Whistle Test Tuesday night. One night I saw a band called Dr. Feelgood.
Yeah.
And the next day I formed a band. It changed my life. Life-changing experience.
What was it about seeing Feelgoods? Was it...
Yeah, and it's funny. It's a great point. Why not focus?
Because...
It's
really weird. All it is, I remember watching an interview with Paul Weller.
Yeah.
And he said the minute he saw Wilco...
Yeah. It was Lee and Wilco.
Yeah.
It was their honesty, their dress sense. Mm. I immediately went to the Salvation Army and all the second-hand clothes shops. The one that Ian Dury's photographed out front, New Boots and Panties, that was in Victoria. We was there. I was wearing Dead Man shoes. I was wearing suits. I'd go and get them, like, adjusted. I was buying shirts at Sally Army for 20 pence. And that's how... That changed my life. I wanted to be in a band like Dr. Feelgood. What it was, I don't know. I'm a working class boy. They were, Wilco is a school teacher, slightly more educated, but I felt an affinity towards them. I was drawn towards them.
Yeah.
And of course, we all loved the Bluesers, the Howling Wolf, Little Walter, Muddy Waters. And that was the link. That was the link. They were playing it in their own style, you know. And when I got to meet them, you know, probably 7-6 years later, they were everything I thought they would be. They were amazing.
Yeah.
They lived it. They lived it.
And it feels now that... Because they're from like 5 minutes up the road from me. We're very proud in Essex of them. And unfortunately, the passing of the Hot Rods last week.
Old Barry.
Yeah.
Oh, man, what a lovely guy. What a character.
Right.
Oh, what a character.
But it feels that the Feelgoods now, they get mentioned in the right conversations. It feels
they
like
now.
They get there now.
And I think Wilco's illness has brought that to the fore, unfortunately.
Mm.
Well, fortunately, he's alive.
Mm.
But I've been championing Wilco for 20 years.
Yeah.
And everybody's thought, oh, shut up, Dennis. But I've championed Wilco as one of the greatest white R&B songwriters we've had in this country. The lyrics, he just got it. She does it right. Checkbook. I mean, you know, amazing, amazing songwriter. And they peaked at that time. And I was with Sparko and the Big Figure the other week at a memorial for Lee. And, you know, talking about their early days and talking about how it all just exploded. And, you know, they're similar guys to me. And I think that's what I saw on the television that night was an affinity, you know. And I went next day and formed a band.
How quickly did you get, or did it happen? Did you get a record deal?
No, I went down to my school, back to Thomas and Beckett. And in the Thomas and Beckett, it was a boxing ring upstairs. And all the villains and the police and the boxers and the footballers and the musicians hung around in the Thomas and Beckett. Beryl used to run it. She was a wonderful landlady. Had everybody in control. You did not throw a bit of litter on the carpet in that pub. She was the governor. And I'm talking heavy, heavy villains, heavy, heavy police. And how they, I used to watch it, I used to see them. They were like the similar fuck characters, right? And then you'd have, like, because where I come from, you either got into being a villain or you was a footballer, or there was some way out, music would get you out of that thing. So I went round to Beckett and I said to Beryl, I had the front, you know, go to Beryl, say, I've got a band, I'm at a school in the Wolf School here. And she gave me a residency. She gave me a residency on Tuesday nights, £25 a night.
I mean, that's a feisty audience you're playing to there, right?
But it sets you up.
Yeah.
Sets you up. And you learn how to handle it. But, of course, you'd have your mum, your dad, all your mates from school all coming down supporting us. And then Terry Rawlings, a lovely lad from Bermondsey, brought about 50 mods down one night. And there was 50 scooters outside. All of a sudden, you're creating a vibe and a scene. So every like-minded person... And this is in the punk area, era where everybody was listening to punk. But it was an independent music scene, like we said earlier about you could see Costello, The Damned, AC/DC, The Jam, you know. So it was very healthy. And everybody would come down and wouldn't admit it, but they liked a bit of R&B.
Yeah.
You know, and we'd do a few Elvis Costello covers. And we learnt our trade in the Thomas and Beckett.
How long did it take before someone sort of picked up when
and
you
then,
were in?
79 is a big year. I lost my father on a Friday night. He was 44. I was 21. I lost my dad. And I had Dingwalls, the first ever gig across the Thames. Dingwalls on a Sunday night, blues night. Do I do it or do I not? And I can't tell you now how I did it, right? So I did it, and in the audience is Paul Jones. And there was a guy who become our manager. And that night changed my life. But I knew my dad would have wanted me to do it.
Yeah,
so we did it. I got married in 79. I signed to A&M in 79, right? And so it was a big, big year for us. And this is 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And it seems like yesterday.
And so once you signed that deal, did you go out on supporting, or did you go out on a headline tour?
First thing we did, they put us on the road. We did every toilet in every part of the city. And it wasn't until we got a phone call to go out with the Kinks in Europe. So we went out with them, and that's where I said we were told, you can't do this, you can't do that. We were out with the Kinks, and that was amazing. And you learn your etiquette. You learn how to conduct yourself with crew. Very important that... You're not an ass with the crew, and you conduct yourself properly and respect everything. And do you know what? You get everything back.
Yeah.
And so that taught me a big lesson. And I was sitting there watching. I watched Ray Davis from side stage for 6 weeks, and I learned how to be a front man. He was as good as Jagger at the time.
Yeah.
He was astonishing.
Oh, he's,
you know,
something spectacular.
You know, with Lennon McCartney, it was two of them. It was just Ray Davis.
Yeah.
And if you look at that catalogue from 66 to 69, what he produced.
It's ridiculous.
It's nuts. It genius.
So, the first time I saw you, I was a very young man. mm-hmm. and you popped up on BBC Two.
Yeah.
Did you realise what you was doing? Because no. You was on the first. So I'm talking about the young ones,
right? It was
right?
a pilot show.
And so was it the pilot? Because I know he was in the first one, so that was the pilot.
Yeah, so what it was is they had a pilot show to show the BBC, you know, whether they could do a series.
Yeah.
So the pilot show. So that came through A&M. This is where A&M was so great with The Who, The Kinks, The Allman Brothers. We took The Allman Brothers. I've just been in Thomas and Beckett, and I'm standing next to Greg Allman and Cher. I mean, it was like God and Goddess, you know, in the dressing room. And they, hey, man, come in. All that, oh, just unbelievable. So then, like, yeah, we get this call to do The Young Ones. Now, we turned up. No one knew nothing. And this is what I like about this. What is this show? Nobody knew what to expect. So I walked in, and the first thing I saw was this guy warming up the audience, and he was called Ben Elton. Right, so he's warmed the audience up, got it all jolly, and they were rehearsing where Viv comes through the wall.
Yeah.
Right, now you watch that program full of chaos and you think it's nuts. They were on it.
Yeah.
That's what shocked me. And Alexis Sal blew my mind.
Yeah.
He was intense and funny. And I'm there going, I think like this. And it was the first time, you know, we saw humour like that. Alternative comedy. It was
completely, completely. Yeah. You know, and it was as punk as punk, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
It was completely,
absolutely
confrontational, and you know, and it was like, it was just. I've never seen anything like it.
Never seen anything like it, and it was so fresh and exciting, and. Being 22, people thinking and politically where I was, it was like I hadn't had that before.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we all had something that we could relate to.
Yeah.
And I think what it was is one of them had seen, I'm not sure if it was Rick or Nigel Planner, had seen us at Warwick University. One of them went to Warwick University. Yeah. And at that time, you know, we talked about all the gigs we did. We just went on this university, Polytechnic.
Yeah.
If you don't know what Polytechnic is, it's a university less VAT, isn't it?
Yeah, right? That's right. Yeah. Couldn't put it any better than that.
So we were doing all them, and one of the guys saw us there and thought we'd be perfect for the program.
And I mean, we mentioned earlier the Damned and Madness on any given night.
Yeah,
they were all on the Young Ones.
And Motorhead.
It was an incredible lineup of bands. Yeah. Like there was just every week there was just a really exciting band.
And you know, when we played Dingwalls, Lemmy was at the back because you could drink late at Dingwalls, and Lemmy was always up the back. You know, we was all mixing.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? There was no like, oh, you're a rock band, you're heavy metal, we're blues, we don't talk to you.
Yeah,
it weren't like that. It was all mingling and together. It was a lovely, lovely time.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it was. It was really healthy, I think.
So when you weren't gigging, I want to know for the next track, Dennis.
Mm.
When you went clubbing, what song reminds you of
Chalamar?
That? It was, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, dear, I fell in love with Jody Watley. We did Top of the Pops later on with my other band, The Truth, and Jody Watley.
She was beautiful, wasn't she? She was
up close and personal. She was stunning. And that song, I like Chalamar. I have to, you know.
Night Remembers, a Stone Cold classic, mate.
Isn't it? I mean, you know, there could be September
by
Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons is another immense favourite of mine. And, of course, it wasn't until later on. The drummer sings the opening. Frankie sings the bridge. And then the middle eight sung by the bass player. Well, anyway, so... You know, as I said to you earlier, you asked me today, there'll be five different songs down there. But Chalamar, just what a feel-good song.
Where was you going clubbing?
Oh, I wasn't very good at it. I mean, because I remember Mick Talbot and Paul Weller taking the mickey out of me. We'd turn up in the club and look like we weren't welcome there or look out of it. I'd go to a live gig and I'm fine. I go to the Roundhouse, the Marquee, the 100 Club. I'm fine. I walk into a bit of a disco club thing in the late 70s, early 80s. I did stick out. It weren't really my thing.
Yeah.
But I think it was up... Gary Crowley was there, up in Soho somewhere.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name. But yeah.
What did you want from clubbing if you went?
Music. Music. And I'd love to see people dance. I can't dance really. And when I see people dance and that effect that music has on us. Do you know, I walked out of my house 2 days ago with my son and there was a classical lesson coming out the window. I've not heard classical music for years coming out of a... So someone's having a piano lesson. And do you know what? I said to Sonny, I said, how do you feel? I feel great. And that's the power of music,
yeah.
No matter what. And I just think in schools, we've got to get music back on the curriculum.
Yeah.
Big time. Because it's so, so important.
Absolutely.
To this human psyche that we have.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Track 6.
Mm.
Favourite song from an artist from your home county?
London.
Mm-hmm. We'll go London.
Did I go Kinks all to my minute?
You did.
Yeah, wow. I asked Ray to do this. On a dew-soaked leaf creeps a crawly caterpillar is the opening line. It's stunning. And so we toured the Kinks, and I said, when we got the confidence, you know, sitting with him, I said, would you play All Tomorrow Night? I said, it's just got everything to me. And he did one night, and then Mick Avery, the drummer, come at them out. He said, was that you who said that? He said, we haven't played that for 22 years. You know, because Ray would do that. He'd just pull it out and expect the band to remember it and know it. And I said, yeah, so it's one of my favourites, yeah. Wow, what a song.
Oh, man.
What a song.
Like,
yeah.
To find yourself in a scenario where you're sitting there with Ray Davies is surreal.
Mm.
When you've spent enough time that you're comfortable to say, do us a favour, play that song.
Yeah.
I mean, not many people get that,
do they?
That's
Cheek. I had all the front and Cheek back then, and because I'd done it in such a... He saw I was meant it. You know, you know, if I can say to anyone out there, be yourself, and you'll get most of what you want.
Yeah.
Be yourself, don't be false.
Yeah.
And you'll get surprising what comes to you.
Yeah.
And he saw that, you know, I was genuine, I meant it. I'm from Tufnell Park, he's from Muswell Hill. We had so much in common.
Yeah.
Football, working class.
So how did someone that, you know, come from where you come from, you know, working class, deal with the offerings that being in a successful band throw your way?
Oh, it's easy, really. I mean, you know, I always
You remain grounded?
Very much. I always like Mike Tyson. I look at Mike Tyson. He came out, no socks, no robe, gloves, shorts, ready to fight. No paraphernalia. And I've kept that very, very much like all the rider. I hate riders. I hate backstage bullshit. You know, I keep it really, really simple. And that's how I like to run the band.
What's on your rider?
Well, funny enough, I've just ditched it.
Right.
I'll tell you why, because I worked out if we ditch it, I save 750 plastic bottles.
Really?
750 plastic bottles would have been backstage and consumed. So, you know, we've all got them, like, canisters things now with water in it. And stuff like that, you know, very...
That's amazing, very, mate.
Yeah, you got to do it. And I'll tell you the worst thing, if there's chocolates, sweets, biscuits and Smarties backstage, you will just munch.
Yeah.
You know, so to take them things out, just to be focused on the music,
yeah.
You know, and not say, well, where's my avocado sandwich?
Yeah.
You know, oh, I can't play and all that.
Yeah.
No, a very Mike Tyson approach to, you know, no frills, really.
How would you deal with it if you see, you know, back when you're doing like these sort of tours and that, if you was to see someone else playing up like that, would you address it?
It's probably not for me to address it, but
yeah.
I'd think a little bit less of them, you know,
yeah.
You know, maybe, you know. And if we want a Jack Daniels or a Remy Martin, we'll go out and have a, you know, go and buy a bottle. You know, I just, that's not important. Even the hotels, funny enough. I mean, my partner, Mark Felton, he loves his hotel and he loves a bit of, you know, pampering. Fine, and I respect that. But for me, as long as there's a bed and it's dry,
yeah,
I'm cool, you know. I won't fuss. So yeah. He might change his room two or three times in an hotel because the sunlight ain't right and the curtains ain't right. But me, I don't care. But it takes all sorts.
Yeah, of
Not
course.
Everyone's like me.
Yeah.
One thing fascinated me, the Kinks, right? They have a curry backstage after every show, right? So I've got a night off in Chicago over the US of A. I go and see the Kinks and, hey, how you going? I go backstage. They've got a curry and it was just like a curry from England, which is unusual in the States because their approach on curry is different to ours. Ours is unique. And I said to the lads, where the hell? They said, oh, we found a chef, so. So they hunted down. And see, the Kinks were like that. They were very... They'd have a curry, a Ruby Murray, after the show.
Yeah.
Same as Dr. Feelgood, funny enough. Lee called it a Ruby Murray. Or Len Murray, you know, everybody had a different name for a curry. And the Kinks, how did you get, you know, that standard of British curry in Chicago? Unheard of.
Yeah.
Unheard of. It's great, you know. So every band's got their little quirk, but I do like, you know, pretty simple backstage facilities, you know.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. Don't like the frills and the spills.
Last track.
Sure.
A song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Did I choose Up?
You did.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Up. We're from Lewisham, UPP. You can't get it on Spotify. Can you?
Yeah, found it yesterday.
Fantastic. About time.
Because I hadn't heard this track, so I was doing a bit of prep.
What one was it?
Never Turn My Back on You.
So... Up were a three-piece band. The bass player was called Stephen Amazing. Alan Clark was on keys and the drummer. I was at school and one guy said, oh, do you want to come and see Up? They're supporting Wishbone Ash at Hammersmith Odeon. And I went and tagged along with this. I think his name is Chris. Lovely guy. So helpful towards me in my early days. He took me and I did a bit of roadie in 76, 77, backstage at Hammersmith Odeon, and they were supporting Wishbone Ash. And this three-piece band were playing Philadelphia Soul.
Yeah.
Right? And their mate was Jeff Beck. So I got their first, I think they only made two albums, and I followed them everywhere, but they never got out. I saw them at the Marquee, but they never quite made it.
Yeah.
But... anyone out there, just listen to them two albums, and they were amazing. No one was doing it. Like, I suppose that's what it was.
Yeah.
Not like 9 Below Zero. We had Dr. Feelgood, Eddie and Hot Rods, and all the guys. We had a sort of an energy of that sort of thing. Up were just, there was no one like them.
They're out there on their own.
On their own.
Yeah. That's the thing. If you can,
you know,
if you've got like-minded bands wrapped around you that, you know, you can ride the wave together.
You can ride the wave, perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Up didn't have that, but, oh, man, what a band. What a band.
That track's incredible.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I didn't know what to expect from it.
Yeah.
And it's...
White Boy Soul, wasn't it?
Completely. Like Blue-Eyed Soul?
Blue-Eyed Soul.
Is that what they call it? I don't know.
No, you're absolutely right. Blue-Eyed Soul. Yeah.
Lovely.
And a talented bunch of guys and... They used to rehearse at New Cross, and as I say, you know, I got to briefly meet them. And Glenn and I from Squeeze often talk about them because he found them as well at that time, but knew the guys more than me.
Have you worked with Squeeze?
Glenn? Yeah. One of the tracks on the album, I've had the privilege to write with Chris and Glenn, genius songwriters. Very, very, very. I mean, writing with them's easy because you whack the ball over the net and it comes back, you know. It's not like you whack it and nothing comes back.
Yeah.
You've got ideas and you're bouncing ideas. And when you're writing with quality songwriters, it's simple, easy. Because, you know, when you're a songwriter, you could come up with a worse Wally idea, but you must never be frightened to say it because what that could do is open up
of course.
Something else. So with songwriting, you really wear your heart on the sleeve.
Yeah. So what's happening now? What's
40th anniversary tour, new album Avalanche. Still got lots of things in the diary to do. So
Where's the tour taking you?
Southend.
Whereabouts?
Chinneries.
Lovely.
Yeah, and yeah, we're all over 20 dates.
Lovely.
Yeah, all over the place, yeah. So enjoying it. I think, you know, I've got a really good band. I've got my son on drums.
How's that? How's that sort of 20 days away in the band environment with your boy in the band?
We share a room as well.
That's intense.
It is intense, and sometimes it's hard being a father and the boss.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And it causes a bit of tension. But if I could say to anyone out there, go and play music with your children. It's just the most thrill of a lifetime. You just can't imagine it, you know. And he's good and he's arrogant and he gives me grief, but he gives me energy. He turns me on. I mean, he said to me like three years ago, Dad, you're a Tame Impala. I went, oh, you know, and I'm going to him, you're a Santana.
Yeah.
So it's a lovely way of exploring music together.
Lovely.
Yeah. It is really nice, yeah. So, but tense at times. And if we have a row, the other four members, it can be uncomfortable. That's the problem.
Yeah.
If you have a row, it's quite intense.
Yeah.
You know, so we try not to do that.
Yeah.
So if you come on stage and go, you can't have a rollick. You've got to just hold it.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe when you get home.
Yeah.
You know that? And he'll pull me up, and it's fantastic, you know.
Brilliant.
You know, I've brought him up, you know, to express himself, and he does let me have it at times.
Keep you on your toes.
Absolutely.
Where can people find out about the shows?
Website, 9below0.com.
Yeah.
And you can find everything you need there. We've got Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all those social medias. Because as I say on stage, we're not on the radio, we're not on the telly. You can't read about us in the press. So social media's been quite a positive for us.
Well, we'll tag you in everything when this comes out. And Dennis, it's been an absolute privilege.
Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate.
There you go. Thanks for listening. Thanks massively to Dennis for doing that. I told you, he was an absolute gem, wasn't he? And it's really nice to just find out these incredible stories that, you know, I do a bit of prep for these and I start to sort of, you know, I start off with Wikipedia and I have a little look through and if they're musicians where I don't know, like, their whole catalogue, I'll go and have a listen on Spotify to kind of get a real feel for the conversation. And it's just amazing when these conversations just unfold into, you know, and then, you know, when they're talking about just, you know, requesting Ray Davies to play a track. I mean, Christ, I mean, nobody gets these opportunities. And so it's so nice to be able to see what it's like and get to have a little peek behind the curtain of what it, you know, was like to have been one of those bands that toured with these huge, huge bands. So, thanks ever so much again for listening. And I will be back next week. In the meantime, go and check out 9below0.com and have a look in the back catalogue, and also check out podbiblemag.com. See you later. Oh yeah, sorry, I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. PodBibleMag.com. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Keep me, Stu, with him.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.